Time to take a look at your pet's health with Dr. Sandy Sacha, clinical professor in the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. Pleased to have her along and pleased to have you listening in. If you have a question about your pet's health, give us a call. Here's the number, 1-800-642-1234. Or in the Madison area, reach us at 263-1890. Give us a call. Dr. Sandy, welcome back.
It's nice to be back. If I sound a little husky, I apologize.
A little cold?
Yeah, but, you know, hey, the first one of the season, so, yeah.
Well, I tell you what, you sound great to me, and I'm glad to have you here. And I'm sure that listeners are really happy to have you here. There's been so much news about this pet food business. You must be getting really sick of talking about it.
I am. And, you know, it's I think most of what I do is just try to alleviate people's fears and concerns. And we've been getting a few patients in that we've done blood work and things on, and nothing has come back abnormal. We've had one suspect case at the veterinary school that survived. But again, to be able to prove that the food was the actual problem, you need to have samples of the food. All we have is like, well, yeah, they may have eaten it and had the symptoms, but there's other things that can cause the similar symptoms as well.
What is one of the issues that we were discussing before the show, I think, had related to the sort of the spin-off problems that can result from people not feeding their pets properly, being worried about the pet food.
Right, right. And so, well, I was just talking to Jim Packard, who, with his little dog, has decided to go off of the canned version of Mighty Dog that he was adding to his new dog's food to get it to eat. And Mighty Dog in general, as a canned product, is an excellent product, but some of them were on the recall list, some of the gravy-based products. And so he decided to pull the dog off of that and substitute rice instead. Well, although rice is something that dogs like, and it's an excellent source of carbohydrates, it's not well balanced. And if that's making up a significant proportion of the pet's food, we're going to start seeing some problems with nutritional imbalances. So, you know, people are not making smart choices about what they're making changes to. I had another client in the other day that's substituting blueberries. And I kind of did a double take on that. But, you know, because she's read that they're good sources of antioxidants. But, yes, you know, you can overdo a good thing. And so, you know, I think you're still better off staying with a well-balanced commercial food. Or if you want to make your pet's own diet, there is a website that I've given out on multiple interviews that I've done that's called BalanceIt.com. And this is a website that has actually been started up by two veterinary nutritionists from the University of California, Davis. And they provide owners. There is a fee for the recipes, but they can do diet comparisons if you're looking at wanting to compare one diet to another. They can do calorie content, you know, of the foods for you if you've got a pet that has a weight issue. And they can give you some really good recipes for homemade diets as well that are well-balanced, done by a veterinary nutritionist, just not somebody online that said, well, I've made this and one dog has done all right. These are tested, evaluated diets.
BalanceIt.com.
That's right.
All right. Well, let's go to Al in Milwaukee. Al, hello.
Hi. I don't actually have a pet, but I'm concerned about my own health.
Okay.
And the issue is wheat gluten. Over the weekend, a relative was telling me, no, it's not wheat gluten in the pet food. They found a leaky roof or something. However, I use wheat gluten in whole wheat bread. I get it. It comes in cans from California. It doesn't say made in China in it. But even if the wheat gluten wasn't the cause of the kidney failure in the pets, they still found melamine in it. And I'd just like to know where this stands. What are they saying about wheat gluten?
Well, the wheat gluten has been is in many human foods as well as some pet foods, not many of them. And there was one particular batch number that came from one particular place in China that was imported and was used for manufacturing some of the pet foods. They are now, I know the FDA is looking into whether some of this wheat gluten actually made it into the human food chain as well. But, you know, at this point, I wouldn't be making any changes in your diet or being worried about it. You know, much of the wheat gluten is actually made in the United States. This happened to be a batch that came from another country that didn't have quite the same evaluation processes that are in check here in this country. And it really, this has opened up our eyes as veterinarians who do make pet food recommendations that you know, although the FDA does an excellent job of monitoring pet food companies, probably better than many human food manufacturers are, at least looking at the level that pet food manufacturers have to, the hoops they have to jump through to be able to get foods on the market, that, you know, we maybe can improve on our surveillance. And this is just, you know, again, going to make us be better pet food consumers and better veterinarians and better pet food manufacturers in the long run. And the business about the leaky roof, total different recall. Okay, that was something totally unrelated, where some pet food that was being held in storage or some ingredients that were being held in storage ended up getting molded, and they had a mold toxicity similar to what they found in peanut butter for people not too long ago. We had the same thing with a recall for peanut butter, where probably there was some mold growing on some of the peanuts that were used in the manufacturing. That's a totally different recall. So, yeah. And when it comes to what's the chemical of the day as the being recalled, we really don't know at this point. Although they've identified melamine, we have no evidence that that's what's causing the problem in our pets. And so I think it's just a matter of staying tuned, staying calm, realizing that the numbers of reported cases that you will find on various blogs are probably greatly exaggerated. In the veterinary population, we're seeing very few cases. And I think they caught this early, and people are smart. And with all the, you know, press that this has been getting, I think everyone is aware of it and is making sure that they're double checking what they're feeding their pets. And I'm hoping I won't ever see a case.
All right. Thanks, Al. Bernie in Manitowoc, it's your turn now. Hi, Bernie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
The day that you last had a veterinarian on, I don't think it was Dr. Sawchuk, if I remember correctly, it was another veterinarian. I think it was March 15th. My dog was very sick and had gotten very sick over the previous weekend. And I almost called in to ask about it. She had had a previous condition with bladder tumors and had some trouble urinating, but she had gotten suddenly very acutely sick. Her tongue turned bright red and acted like she had a fever, was real lethargic, wouldn't eat. And assuming that, you know, this was just, you know, the advance of her old condition, we had her put to sleep later that day. Yeah, I think it was later that day.
Mm-hmm. I'm very sorry to hear that, yeah.
And Saturday morning was when I learned about the recall, and sure enough, she was eating one of the affected foods, but I've been told that, you know, nobody's really too concerned about it because it was an older lot number. But as I've watched the thing progress, you know, first they said it was only food manufactured in February and then January. Then they moved it back to food manufactured in December. Or after December 3rd. Now they've identified some foods that were manufactured as far back as November 8th. And this is on the menu foods recall list. And her lot number was October 25th. And as I've been watching all of this, I've become increasingly suspicious, you know, given the timing of the onset. We had just bought that food for her, and she only ate 11 cans of it, and that's when she got sick and stopped eating.
Right. Most dogs and cats that have developed illness as a related to the food problem get sick within a matter of a day or two of eating the food. They go into acute renal failure. So I'm not sure how many cans over the 11 cans that you were feeding, how many days were between.
She was eating 2 cans a day.
2 cans a day, yeah. I would have expected symptoms to have occurred much quicker. But this is the problem with speculating as to whether this is what caused your dog to run into troubles or not. If you have a suspected case, and I'm going to be reading right here about what the FDA has said is for, you know, field investigation of these cases, is that first of all, you have to have veterinary documented case of renal failure, so blood work and so on done. Autopsy results, full autopsy with tissue samples being sent in as well. Food consumed within a week of the illness, which in your case, that would be the first thing that we have available that we could, you know, base it on. Intact, unopened cans of the food that they can then use for evaluation as well. And even if it was partially used cans, if you are suspicious, freeze it. They can be still used later for evaluation, even if it's been frozen. So, you know, unfortunately, your dog was old, had other health-related issues that could have affected her kidneys. She could have gone into acute renal failure because she had a bladder tumor that obstructed and she didn't have an ability to urinate. Her bladder may have ruptured, and that could cause very similar symptoms as well. And so I think that if you're looking at, you know, what's most likely in this case, rather than, you know, looking for the zebras, you know, if you're hearing hoofbeats, I think you need to look at, you know, probably your dog died of what it was initially diagnosed with. And I can't strongly recommend enough that if you've got questions regarding a pet and you're considering euthanasia, if your veterinarian offers to do an autopsy, have it done. That's the only way you're going to legally have a leg to stand on.
Interesting. Bernie, I'm sorry for your the loss of your dog.
I wanted to have an autopsy done, but the vet didn't want to do it because she said the lot number wasn't on the recall list.
Yeah. You can still, that's always something that is your right to do. Just because your veterinarian said no, there's always, other veterinarians that could do that for you and collect the appropriate tissues. And they don't want to just see kidney tissues. It's a full autopsy needs to be done with tissues from multiple body organs being at least collected and saved for future evaluation. They may not have to go in at that point, but if it ever comes down to that, you know, you want to take part in a class action suit, that may be what you're going to need.
And thanks very much for calling, Bernie. Appreciate it very much. Talking your pet's health today with Dr. Sandy Sawchuck, clinical...
You're having trouble today. Okay.
I don't know why I'm
think
having...
woodchuck with saw in front. There you go. Okay.
I've never had this problem before. Dr. Sandy Sawchuck, clinical professor at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a question about your pet's health, we hope you'll join us at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. A couple open lines. We'll get you on fairly fast with Dr. Sandy Sawchuck. And let's go to Phil next in Fort Atkinson. Phil, hello.
Hi, how are you guys doing?
Great.
I have a question here. We have a cat that is fairly getting up in years right now. But we bought another cat a little while ago, and she had overtaken the food dish. And so now what happened was our cat now, she weighs about 6 pounds. And our vet keeps telling us to, you know, she's having a problem with vomiting.
Mm-hmm.
And she vomits like 4, 5, 6 times a day.
Ooh.
So the vet told us that he doesn't want to see her get any skinnier, so he said, get this food. So we went to the pet store, and the guy come back and said, no, this food is junk. It's got all chicken byproduct meal, fish byproduct. So he gave us some, like, all natural with fish, you know, chicken, lamb, and all that other stuff. And I think it's because she's so hungry, she tries to scarf everything down so fast.
Mm-hmm.
And when she vomits, she's coming up as full food chunks.
Well, I'm concerned with the level of vomiting that your cat is experiencing. I would hope that your veterinarian, the fact that you've already said your cat is an elderly cat, has done some basic lab work to rule out some of the common problems that can cause pets that are at that age to start losing weight. In cats, probably the top diseases that we see are hyperthyroidism, an overactive thyroid gland, which can cause cats to lose weight, be very hungry. They can vomit with this as well. And some of it may be just piggy cat syndrome, but other times it's a function of what's going on with their whole syndrome. We do see cats with kidney failure losing weight as well. Typically, their appetite is not very good with that, though. And then diabetes is another thing that we'll see. And so getting your cat in for a thorough physical exam, some lab work done first, and then if all that comes back normal, be looking at what could be going on in the abdomen and be concerned about a foreign body, an intestinal tumor, something else that could be causing your cat to vomit at this level. And I hope that that's all been done. But this is also really interesting, too, is people taking the advice of a pet store employee regarding choices of food. Your veterinarian is the best source of information as to what to feed your pet. And although pet store employees have maybe some training from the pet food manufacturers, remember, they are profiting from you buying the food. A veterinarian that's giving you a recommendation and having you go elsewhere is not, you know, they're looking out for the best interest of your pet. And so, you know, jumping to using a different food just because somebody at the pet store, and most of those people that are there know very little about pet nutrition, is just one of those things where I just, you know, can't, I'm angry that people will take their advice over their veterinarian's advice.
The thing is it's, some of it, he has done, we've actually had two different vets look at it because they've both done lab work and they both come back and said that everything is fine.
Mm-hmm.
So they thought maybe a bladder infection. But the thing was, is it's, a lot of it has to do with cost issue, though, too. Mm-hmm. I can't afford to be spending, you know, $100, $200, $300, $400 on a cat.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, and then they're trying to tell us, well, we want you to buy a $50 bag of 7-pound food.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And it's stuff like that I, you know, because it's getting to the point where we may have to get rid of our cat.
Yeah.
Because of it.
Yeah.
Because I also have a toddler that has discovered where she likes to vomit.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Well, if indeed your cat just has what I like to call piggy cat syndrome, which is, you know, cats' stomachs can hold about a mouse-sized portion of food, and if they're wolfing food down and swallowing it and stretching their stomach and then up it comes again, you can slow their eating down by spreading the food out on like a cookie sheet or putting obstacles in the way of the kibble, such as golf balls, walnuts in the shell, which gives them something that they have to work around, and it slows them down a little bit so that they don't swallow things so fast, and that may help if that's the situation. But, you know, I can understand, you know, your concern regarding veterinary costs, and boy, I counsel people all the time, you know, when you get a pet early on, if you can't afford it, get pet insurance.
Mm-hmm.
It's well worth it, because, I mean, I have pet insurance for my own dog, and I've mm-hmm. just got another dog a couple of months ago, and she's next on the list of getting insurance for her, and I'm a veterinarian, but you know what? I don't do surgery, and all it takes is one surgical emergency, which I experienced last fall and ended up having to pay dearly for, that you start realizing that, you know, maybe this wouldn't be a bad idea to make a little investment on an annual basis to, you know, cover mm-hmm. the future costs for your pet. So I'm sorry that it's not working out with your budget, but, you know, that's something to consider when you do adopt pets, that mm-hmm. they are going to be costing something down the road.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. And Rick in Marshfield, it's your turn now. Hi, Rick.
Good morning, Larry and Sandy. How are you today?
Good.
Fine, thank you.
Great. I had my dogs in for her annual checkup last week, and my vet told me I should lose a little bit of weight, and she suggested I should put them on a raw meat diet, just raw chicken, raw venison, any, give them the chicken bones and all, as long as it's all raw eggs, fruits. I was just wondering if you ever heard of a diet like that.
Well, there is a diet that people will call the BARF diet, and you can imagine where it gets its name. But it stands for either biologically appropriate raw food, okay, or bones and raw food. There has been a lot of stuff published on this, and again, there are some veterinarians that, you know, believe in feeding this type of diet. I see more problems with it from the standpoint of anything that, you know, we're concerned about, such as salmonella on chicken, E. coli in beef, is going to be there as a problem for our pets and as a problem for us because we're handling the food, handling the dishes, the dog's licking us, and the dog's defecating and we're picking it up. And so that could be a health risk not only to the dog, but also to the humans as well. Bones, of course, can be, you know, fracture teeth and can cause gastrointestinal perforation and blockage. So I really think you got to be careful with this. And just coming up with, you know, throw whatever's in the refrigerator at your dog, again, is not going to be a balanced diet. And if you are going to be going to a raw food diet, it's consumer beware. Make sure no one in the family is immunocompromised. Please, if you have young children, avoid diets like this because of the health risk if they're handling the dishes or whatever afterwards. and make sure that you are adding the appropriate supplements in and that you go about the introduction of a diet like this slowly. There are very good commercially available low-calorie foods on the market for pets as well. And for many dogs, it comes down to feeding less and exercising more. Kind of sounds familiar, doesn't it? Just like people, okay?
Just like people.
Yeah, eating less and exercising more. And, you know, most of the labs and golden retrievers and some of these hunting dogs have they need very little fuel to keep their engine running. I call them the economy models of the dog world, and yet they would like to make you think that they're hungry all the time. We tend to overfeed them. So I'd be looking at cutting back on what you're currently feeding, looking at all the treats, the rawhide, anything like that that you're feeding, doing a calorie evaluation, how many calories your dogs need, and try to stick with that. It can be difficult for the human, not the dog, but for the human, and you know, really hike up the exercise now that the weather's getting better.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Thank you, Rick.
Thank you much.
Appreciate it. Gail in Iola, your turn. Hi, Gail.
Hi there, and thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
And Dr. Sawchuk, I have a young, not quite a year old, Shih Tzu. And she's a perky little dog, and she's not a grazer. I try to give her a certain time of the day, which is about mid-morning when I feed her. And I have fed her from dog food from the time that I got her from the breeder. And now she seems to be being kind of picky and doesn't want to eat the dry food. So I've been kind of bad, and I've tried a few canned dog foods, which she absolutely turns her nose up at, won't eat any of them. So I tried some tuna fish one day, and lo and behold, she ate all of her food. And I'm just wondering if I do this tuna fish thing, if that's kind of a bad thing that I shouldn't be doing.
It's bad.
It's bad.
It's bad. Okay, it's not balanced. Tuna fish is not going to be a balanced diet. And
okay.
If you're going to be feeding tuna fish, you better make sure that you're supplementing with antioxidants and so on, because of the fact that it is, you know, there's the fats and so on that you have to be concerned about. So
okay.
I'd be, you know, even though your dog likes that, you know, and again, this is one of these things where, is your dog peeing, pooping, maintaining her weight? Okay. She has gone through, she's a year old, she's finished her growth phase where
uh-huh.
she's, you know, had to eat a lot to be able to grow to the size that she is. And so now you may be having a dog that doesn't need to eat as much because it's gone through all that high metabolism stage. You've probably had her spayed, right?
Yes,
yeah,
I did.
And that's going to lower their metabolism by a good percentage. Some people say 20, some people say 30%. So they need to eat less after being spayed. And
uh-huh.
so you may be putting the food out there and, you know, she'll probably eat it. But if she can sit and wait until you doctor it up with something, no wonder
yeah.
why she's going to
yeah.
hold her nose, you know, just turn her nose up at it. So, again, sometimes this is harder for the owner to
yes.
say, here's your food, eat it. And, you know, I always ask, how long do you let it sit there before you start tempting her with other things?
I've gone as far as a couple of days.
Okay. And yet I'm sure during that time, was she getting any treats?
Yes, a couple. If she,
yeah,
if she goes outside and, you know, does her job, then usually
yeah.
a little.
And she probably still had good exercise and
uh-huh.
energy, and she was waiting for those dog biscuits, which she may like better. Yeah, you know, and I think sometimes it's the dog is really good at training us. So,
yeah.
you know, and it may be that just the kibble size or shape may not be appropriate for her.
Okay.
You may want to try looking at some of the others that are out there. I mean, I feed my own dogs. I don't like mentioning brand names, but I have found the most effective diet for them for chewing, flatulence, not choking on their food is one called Royal Canin Bulldog Formula. It's shaped like Fritos. It's weird shape, but it works best for their mouth. And it's got an anti-flatulence property built into it. And so they're much more comfortable to live with. So, you know, you may want to be checking on, you know, just seeing, because I know that Eukanuba has come out with some breed-specific formulas. But, you know, something for the smaller brachycephalic breeds.
Okay.
Also look at, if you haven't had her in for dental evaluation, sometimes their bite is all off. And if they've got retained baby teeth or anything else going on that could be interfering with their ability to chew,
mm-hmm.
that may be why she prefers canned food or tuna over her dry food. So
okay.
She's coming up at that point, being a year old, that she needs to go in for her annual exam. Bring
uh-huh.
this up with your veterinarian and make sure they do a good oral exam on her as well.
Okay. And then is it all right that they just eat dry food? I mean, do you really have to supplement with canned food?
You don't have to supplement with canned food. Nutritionally, they're very equal, except obviously you're paying for a lot of water. And it's a little more palatable, and so you've got increased palatability. Dogs can do very well on dry food. They're well-balanced diets. They're going to be meeting all of her nutritional needs if you stay with one that is a nationally known brand of food that is an age-appropriate food for your dog. So,
okay. All right. Yes, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Gail. Thanks for calling. Bob in Indiana, your turn. Hi, Bob.
To iWireless. The customer.
Yep. Well, we lost him. He's traveling by vehicle here, I think, and we lost him. That's too bad. Let's go to Nancy in Sturgeon Bay. Nancy, hello.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I subscribe to a journal called The Whole Dog Journal. It's a monthly guide to natural dog care and training, and they put out a list of the top approved dry dog foods that are mostly natural and holistic. And I heard you mention the Royal Canin. Royal Canin is listed, but I also downloaded the food recall list on March 20th, and I know a number other foods have been listed to it, and I've compared the two lists, and there's no crossover. So the ones that have been recalled are totally different than the ones that have been approved by the Whole Dog Journal. So I was wondering, first of all, what you thought about the Whole Dog Journal in terms of their integrity, and also what you think about just feeding holistic foods to a dog.
Well, it's kind of in holistic. Is it necessary? It's probably once it gets into the stomach and gets mixed with stomach acid and everything's filtered around, they don't care whether it's whole dressed chicken or chicken meal, okay? Because you're paying more, and that's for the wet chicken that's being dehydrated to go into the dry food. So a lot of the way things are labeled are there to improve the appearance of where the ingredient is on the label. If you put remember when you look at a label of pet food, the top ingredients, they have to be ranked in order of weight going in. And obviously, wet chicken is going to weigh more than chicken meal. And so people will say, oh, wet chicken, I would rather eat that than dried up chicken. But when you actually look at the food, it's still dried up chicken. It's, it's gone through the processing and it's still going to be the same. I don't shop at a health food store and I buy the cereal off the shelf and I love my candy bars and I enjoy a beer now and then. And, for me, it's not that critical. For some people, they want to be organic. They eat organic. They want their pet to eat organic. Fine. I have no problems at all with that. But is it necessary? Probably not. Pets have lived longer now being fed well-balanced commercial pet foods than they ever have in the past. We've got them living longer and healthier because we are feeding them correctly. If you're comfortable with doing it, great. But is it absolutely necessary? Do I preach that, you have to use, something that says organic or holistic on the bag? No, you don't have to. And there are many, many good foods that are out there. The Whole Dog Journal, yeah, it's one of those journals that are out there that I know a lot of people read. It's been published for a long time. And again, look at where the sources come from and who's writing the articles in there. And, are they a peer-reviewed article or just somebody that's just tooting their own horn about their beliefs in certain pet foods? You brought up too the lists of pet foods. I'm going to give two websites that are kept up to date on almost a daily basis that will keep owners informed as to if there are any other recalls, which have links to the FDA site as well. Easy, they're both really easy. One is the AVMA, stands for American Veterinary Medical Association, .org, AVMA.org, and the other one is ACVIM. .org. That stands for the American College of Veterinary Internal Medicine. Both of those have links that will get you to the FDA site, and they are kept up to date. There's things that you can read about information for veterinarians, access as well, and also information written for owners. So suggest that those
good sites.
Good sites, yeah. And so if you really want the scientific end of things, go to the place that says for veterinarians. You don't have to have a code number or prove that you're a veterinarian. You can still get in those sites.
Good. Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks very much. AVMA.org and ACVIM.org.
That's right.
All right. Now let's try Bob in Indiana again. Bob, hi.
Can you hear me now?
We sure can.
Okay, great. Hey, I've got a question. I've got an Airedale Terrier. He's about 16 months old, weighs about 80 pounds, perfectly healthy. We've had him in for blood work. He gets everything he needs. We live on a farm. The thing I can't stand about my dog is he loves excrements. And we got horses and goats, and sometimes we'll even catch him doing his own. And I want to know what causes that and what I can do to stop it.
It's the coprophagic dog, and it's a really hard problem to get under control, because for dogs, if you look at stool eating, there is a time in a dog's life that it's normal, like mother dogs taking care of puppies. They're hardwired to eat stool. We also know that, eating stool from other animals, cat box rating is very common for dogs. Horse nuggets, I mean, they, I like the smell of being around a horse farm. Mm-hmm. So there may be things in there that your dog finds attractive to allow them to want to eat it. Even though we socially don't want to do that, doesn't mean that it's not a normal behavior for the dog. First of all, I'd always make sure that your dog is eating an appropriate diet, that doesn't have any underlying medical problems, that he's producing normal stool, no digestive upsets. Everything's normal that way. If everything comes back...
Everything. We've had all the blood work done. I mean, he had a tapeworm for a while. We got rid of that.
Yep.
Other than that, he's as healthy as a horse.
Okay. Yeah. And so, for stopping him eating his own droppings, there are some things that we can do. To keep him from eating droppings from other animals, all I can say is you got to be out there watching him, and he's on a leash and with you, and you pick it up, which is kind of hard if you're living on a farm all the time. So, but for working, for your own dog, some things to be thinking about. There's a couple of products on the market. One that's called Forbid, and the other one is called Deter, and their little logo is the number one product for dogs that eat number two, which I think is quite humorous. One's a powder, one's a tableted form. It makes the stool taste bad. So it'll make your dog's stool taste bad. I can't suggest you going out and buying enough to treat your horses, because that would cost an arm and a leg. But you can treat your dog. There's another product on the market called Prozyme, which some people have found effective as well. It's a digestive enzyme that, whether it's affecting the dog's digestion or actually making the stool taste bad, the verdict is not come in on that yet. So, but those would be all safe things that you can try. And I'm sorry, brush your dog's teeth. Don't let him kiss you. And have a shovel handy when your horses go. Yeah.
Okay, I'm enjoying the show. I drive truck, and I'm from Indiana, but I was just listening to the show, and I thought, I've got to get an answer to this question. So
it happens on every show. I swear, there is not a show that goes by where I don't get this question. But,
oh, my God.
But yours is a good one. Thank you. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Have a nice day.
Yeah, you too, Bob. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Always happens.
Yeah.
Wendy in Oshkosh, your turn. Hi, Wendy.
Hi, how are you?
Good.
I have two Shiba Inus, about... six, one is six and one is seven, and I'm feeding them Canidae right now. Just the fish, mostly the fish is the primary ingredient. So I wanted an opinion on that, but one of the dogs is really gassy, and it seems like whatever I feed her, she's a little dog, but she can clear a room.
Mm-hmm.
And so
yeah.
You said the Royal Canine.
I'm using that because that was what I like to feed my dogs. My general rule of thumb is find a food that meets your needs, okay? So if you want a natural, holistic food, whatever, then obviously go that route. If it's not that important to you, go with some, whatever. Try to avoid foods that have unnecessary dyes and things in it. And, there's some that have little, like, red worms and yellow this and, and those dyes are there for us, not for the dog. Dogs are colorblind. They see in the blue-yellow spectrum. They don't even see the red dye that are in there. And if the dog vomits on your floor, then your carpet's stained. Getting a food that meets the dog's nutritional needs for the age that they're at, and if they have any health concerns like being overweight or less active and so on, sometimes a lower calorie diet may be necessary. Then once you find the food that you like that is meets your dog's needs, it should say on the bag that it meets AFCO standards and has been, you know, gone through AFCO evaluation. That stands for American Association of Feed Control Officials, AFCO. So you want to see that somewhere on the bag. If you find the food and it meets your dog's needs, feed it for a month and see how your dog does. And the things that you want to be watching for are, one, does the dog like it? Two, what's their coat like after a month? Do you start seeing some changes? Is the coat not as glossy? And you know, so have a look at that. Look at stool volume and consistency. You're the one that has to pick it up. And, you know, if you're starting to see some problems coming out the other end, voluminous stools, more than you want to deal with, then it may not be the appropriate diet. And lastly, flatulence. Okay, there may be something in there that your dog is just having a hard time digesting. And that could be the issue with that. But remember, flatulence may not just be diet related. Sometimes dogs that wolf their food down are swallowing a lot of air, or anxious dogs that are panting a lot will, you know, sometimes swallow more air as well. That's one of the reasons why bulldogs have a lot of problems. I have two of them at home, and they do a lot of mouth breathing because of the way their nasal conformation is. And so they swallow a lot of air and have that as their problem. I mean, we get belching and everything going on in our house. It's very rude behavior when we have guests over. But it's, you know, those are things that you want to be looking at. And it may be that although you like Canada and your other dog is doing great on it, the one that's gassy may not be able to tolerate it, and you may need to be looking at making a diet change to either a different type of Canidae with a different protein base, you know, and that may make all the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Is it normal for them to eat grass when they go outside? Like right now, there's like new fresh grass, and they go out and they're like, oh, yum.
You know, my favorite photo I have that's ancient right now, because I no longer even have this dog, she passed away a while ago, is I have four cats, a tortoise, and this is when I had my Yorkshire Terrier as well. And this is when my daughter was little, and she had a swing set and a slide in the backyard. And you can imagine the rain coming down the slide, making the grass grow nice and tall at the base of the slide. I have a picture of my cat, my Yorkie, and my tortoise all chowing down on the grass. The only one that was a vegetarian there was the tortoise. So some dogs just like to go out. They're grazers. And when they've got nice, tender shoots, it's kind of like me. In the middle of winter, it's like salads. The weather gets warm, and it's like, oh, I would love to have salads around the house. And so dogs can be the same way. If it's accompanied with vomiting, they're not eating their food, they have diarrhea, they're showing signs of GI upset, some dogs will eat grass as a purgative. So, you know, they know that they eat it, they may throw up. So, but if they're healthy and normal, yeah, they may just like a little salad with their dinner. So,
right.
Okay, thanks very much for your help.
You're
thanks,
welcome.
Wendy. Thanks for calling. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, clinical professor at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. Our guest, I'm Larry Mueller. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking Your Pet's Health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk. Give us a call if you have a question at 1-800-642-1234 or in Madison at 263-1890. And Ellen in La Crosse, you are next. Hi, Ellen.
Hi. I have two senior dogs, healthy. The 9-year-old Golden Retriever has one lipoma, and I'm sure that that is because the vet aspirated it and saw only fat cells, he said.
Good.
The 11-year-old Chesapeake Black Lab Cross is very lumpy all over. She mm-hmm. has a lot of kind of small lumps and then one fairly large one on her abdomen. She's otherwise healthy and happy, and at her last vet check, he said, oh, no, those are all just, you know, lipomas. And I was just wondering, is there a characteristic on the exam that's how they know they're all lipomas?
Oh.
Do they have to aspirate every single one of them and find out, or do
good.
We worry?
What a good question. Thank you so much for bringing this up, because it is something that I get concerned about. Let me give you an example of a case that I just had in. First of all, back up a little bit. Lipomas are considered, and they are, benign tumors of fat cells that appear to be, you know, they're very common, may be genetic. Some dogs are just more prone to getting them than others. And if dogs get one, they'll usually get multiple lipomas as they age over the years. Typically, we don't do anything about them. If they're in a spot that's bothering the dog, like right on their chest wall, when they lay down, they bang it, or in their armpit. I had a service dog in the other day that had a big one in his armpit where his harness rubbed. We took that one off because it was bothering him. Usually, we just leave them because they're more cosmetic than anything. But your question as to whether they should all be aspirated or not, this is how I deal with them. Any dog that comes in, even if it's a new time patient, we do a body map and a lump check on every lump that we don't know the diagnosis of. Because I just had a Cocker Spaniel in the other day that had 13 new lumps. We were systematically going through little needle fat, 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 got to lucky number 13, and it turned out to be a mast cell tumor, which is a malignant tumor that required surgery, and yet it felt exactly the same as the other lipomas. The only thing that was weird about it was on a leg, which isn't the typical spot that they like to grow. So I'm a big believer in body mapping. I give the owner a copy of the body map and say, here, when you're petting your dog, if you feel anything new that's not on this map, and all this is a piece of paper with a dog standing left side view, right side view, up, down, you know, and so we can circle where these things are and the date that we found them and what they are. And it gives you some peace of mind and allows us to not have to go back and re-aspirate these masses in the future. It's a one-time deal. It takes sometimes, like when I left this morning, we had a dog in with three new bumps and it took about an extra 15 minutes of my time to be able to go through this, but I think it's really worthwhile.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for calling, Ellen. And Joanna in La Crosse, your turn now. Hi, Joanna.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
I have a six-month-old lab crossed with a Brittany, and she has a problem peeing on the bed.
So what happens? She's laying down on the bed, and it's just leaking out?
I can never catch her doing it, so I don't know.
Okay. Is her backside wet when she gets up in the morning? Do you find that around her vulva and that area that it's wet?
Not generally.
Not generally. Is she jumping up on the bed? You've never seen, is it like a large puddle or just a tiny few, like a small amount?
Like a giant puddle.
A giant puddle. Wow. Well, you know, a couple of things I get concerned about. The reason I was asking these questions is, were we dealing with the problem of what's called urinary incontinence? More common in older female dogs than it is in a six-month-old dog. But, well, you know, sometimes dogs that are spayed, we will see some issues down the road with them developing some incontinence, meaning when they lay down, a little bit of urine will leak out. This is a treatable problem. There's several drugs that we can pick from that work. Some dogs do better on one than the other, but your veterinarian can help you with that. But it's usually in areas owners know. They get up from a nap, there's a wet spot, or the dog's back end is a little wet as well, and, you know, because the urine's just leaking out involuntarily. The fact that you've got a six-month-old dog, though, I just wonder if it's large puddles, whether the dog has just found that, you know, that quilt on the bed is so absorbent and I'd rather jump up and do it on the bed than, you know, go outside. Is it just a housebreaking problem where she is not reliably housebroken and has picked a spot to go that happens to be very inconvenient for you? Rather than the floor, she's decided to go on the beds. And so if you can't figure it out, I would be recommending that, one, you confine her, you keep a leash on her and hook her to your belt, called the umbilical cord method of training, so that she can't wander off, that you up the ante for going to the bathroom outside. So when she, as soon as her fanny's coming up off the ground outside, you're giving her a treat or something like that, that she just doesn't have any freedom in the house to allow her to be able to go on the beds to go to the bathroom.
Okay.
Yeah. Does that make sense? Because, you know, I really think that it's probably not an incontinence issue if you're not finding it in other spots where she's been laying down. And she's young, so.
Yeah.
Do they, like, generally go a lot? Because I've never seen a dog go as much as she does.
Yeah, and that would be the other thing to have looked into as well, is there a medical problem that's going on? Is she, you know, making more urine because she has some type of a congenital kidney problem? Is she a juvenile diabetic? You know, is there something going on? So getting her in for an exam and a urine sample, and bring the urine sample in the container that Mother Nature gave the dog, her bladder. What does that mean? That means she's on a short leash. You don't let her sniff around outside the clinic so that the veterinarian can collect a sample directly from her bladder for evaluation. Doing a free catch sample, just putting like a dish or something underneath her is okay for some things. But in a case like this where we may have a problem with a urinary tract infection, where we may want to be looking at getting a urine culture done, that would be necessary to get a sterile bladder and set up an office call with your veterinarian.
Good luck.
Thanks.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling, Joanna. And Alan in New Auburn, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Alan.
Hi. Well, this is a question and maybe a word of warning. I guess it hasn't been mentioned this program. We discovered some ticks on our animals the other day, cats and dogs, and so my wife got out the front line and put it on our dog, which is fine. And then we found some, it wasn't front line, it was a heart tick. Same thing as frontline, put it on their shoulders. And so we'd had it in there for a year or two and hadn't thought anything about it. And we figured it hadn't been broken open, so we used it. And we put it on the one kitty who had some ticks on him. And he immediately started to scratch and itch and lick at it. And I was a little concerned, but then I thought, well, he just doesn't like the smell of it. Well, to make a long story short, he was having an extreme reaction to it. Eventually found out that he was reacting to the pyrethrum that was in the and I was totally ignorant about this chemical.
Yeah.
And it's an insecticide apparently. I went on a website to Hearts, and indeed somebody, I can't remember, doesn't really matter, has put up a whole web page about animals that have actually cats that have died from it.
Yes.
They apparently get kidney problems from it.
Mm.
Well, thankfully the worst thing we did, I'm just going to put this in, as a warning, is we decided to shampoo him on our own. That it was maybe a half an hour after we had the stuff on. We realized he was having a bad reaction. So we just grabbed some shampoo from under the sink. It was pet shampoo. Shampooed him, and he was just, for the whole night, the poor cat was just beside himself. Discovered that the shampoo that we had used had pyrethrum in it, so we double whammied the poor guy.
Oh.
And he has since recovered.
Okay.
He's just fine. We're watching him. He seems to be doing very well, so we feel lucky. But a lot of people out there are not so lucky. What we ended up doing, we called our vet immediately the next day, and he recommended that we wash him with dish soap because it cuts the oil and the grease.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get off of the phone here and let you know.
Okay.
Take your hands on the air, but I was totally ignorant of this. How much? Why do they use something like that? That is so lethal.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, good questions. Good questions. First of all, thank you. Yes, it is tick season. We have even though we're supposed to get snow tonight. Remember, ticks don't disappear in the winter. They just hibernate. And all you need is a couple of warm days and they'll come up and be sitting and waiting for their next victim to come by. And we're seeing lots and lots and lots of pets with ticks on. So if you haven't started using good tick control, you need to now if you're getting your pet outside. And this is, you also said something that was totally incorrect. You said Hearts is the same as Frontline. Wrong. Sorry. They're not the same products, okay? And you just cannot use things interchangeably. There is a Frontline that's available for cats. It's not absorbed systemically. It stays on the surface of their body. Very mammalian safe. Many of the over-the-counter products they do have permethrin in it, which is a synthetic pyrethrin, extremely toxic for cats. And my guess is that you probably grabbed a dog product and used it on one of your cats. And you cannot do that. There are some safe cat products out there, but be really careful about grabbing the right product. And you're lucky your cat survived. Even just a cat coming into indirect contact or direct contact with it. So let's say you've picked a permethrin product and put it on your dog, a spot-on product, and your cat sleeps next to him or sleeps in the area where the dog has slept. There's enough chemical residue left that it could make your cat sick. So I don't use permethrin products in homes with cats. I don't use them on dogs in homes with cats. And I also recommend that they not be used in homes with young children because, again, we are mammals and it can be absorbed through our skin as well. So you have to be really careful with that. So choose the right product for your pet. Again, seek your veterinarian's help. They'll be able to help you with picking the right products. And they're not all created equal. Just because it comes in a tube doesn't mean that it is going to be the same as the stuff that you're going to be able to get from your veterinarian.
All right. Thanks again for calling. And Tom in Fitchburg, your turn. Hi, Tom.
Hello. A couple things about other things that a cat can and can't have.
Mm-hmm.
Can they have lactose-free milk?
They probably can. Oh, we're getting a little feedback there. But yes, I mean, I think that you have to know your cat. Many cats are lactose intolerant. If your cat, you know, here's my kind of rules of supplementing their diet with other things from the table would be if your cat has a weight problem, don't be adding more calories by giving milk. It might throw the balance of your cat's diet off if they prefer to only drink the milk over eating their food because they're going to be getting protein, a lot more calcium and so on than they may need in their diet. Watch your cat's stool. If they do get diarrhea from it, it's a little overload for their gut. May not be the appropriate thing to use as well. And if you have a cat that's a moocher that has learned that if I bug my owner, I jump on the counter. I mean, I have a friend who's got dogs that have learned to open the refrigerator up and they have to have it bungee cord shut. Those are dogs that we're not going to be feeding table food to anymore because they've learned, you know, that it, you know, people are associated with good food. So, you know, let's bug them. So, you know, a little bit, sure. I mean, and just sit back and wait and see what happens. But make sure your cat is eating the regular amount of food and doesn't have a weight problem.
Okay. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. Our guest today, Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, clinical professor in the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. Pleased to have her along today, and she'll be with us right up until 12:30 here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking Your Pet's Health with Dr. Sandy Sawchuk from the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. Glad to have you listening in. Sandy, I wanted to ask you about this vitamin D overdose in pets business. There's been quite a bit of that made. Is that a serious problem?
Yeah, it's not that serious a problem from the standpoint, do we see it every day? No. But the reason why I hit the press is because of all the pet food recall. One of the first chemicals that they identified was this rat bait called aminopterin or I'm not going to recall what it was. It was kind of there and gone from the press, but it is one that's a vitamin D containing rodenticide that is not marketed in this country, but is used in China. And so they found traces of that. And, you know, we're wondering, is that what's causing, you know, the problems in the pet food?
Okay.
And it has not been substantiated, at least that I know of at this point. So it did hit the news, and so now everyone's always, you know, concerned about vitamin D ingestion, and you can overdose a pet. The two most common ways are pets inadvertently getting into rat bait, and they do sell it here in this country. A few brands are like Ortho Mouse Be Gone, Ortho Rat Be Gone, Quintox, Rampage. If you've got those kind of mouse baits out in your on your property, make sure that they're in dog-proof or pet-proof areas, because even ingestions of small amounts can be toxic for your pet. And if they do ingest it, it's not something you can deal with at home. This would be something that you'd be taking your pet to a veterinarian right away. You need to get them to vomit, give them activated charcoal to get rid of toxins, kind of decontaminate the gut, get some baseline lab work. If they're already showing signs of toxicity, which is elevated calcium levels in their body, their calcium and phosphorus levels go up and you can start running into troubles with tissues actually calcifying. They go into kidney failure. They may have heart issues, arrhythmias, seizuring, and death. So you can manage that. It can be treated, but it's in the hospital on fluids and drugs to try to get the calcium level down and keep the kidneys functioning. So your best bet is to, you know, keep any rat baits like that. Make sure your dog has no access to it. And if you're formulating your dog's own diets, make sure you know the right level of supplements to use for your size of your dog, because you can overdose it with just supplementation as well.
Okay. Kevin in Chippewa Falls, thanks for waiting. Hello.
Hey, Larry, how are you?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Okay. I've got a 4-year-old lab, a yellow lab, and he's got a couple of different issues here lately. First one is, I've never heard of this. I asked my vet about it. He really didn't seem to know anything. But the biggest thing was there's a secretion out of the anal gland.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, let's face it, I mean, when he sits on a rug or whatever.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty. One drop of that can just perfume your whole house.
Oh,
yeah.
Definitely.
Yeah.
So, What causes it? What can you do for it?
Well, all dogs have them, and cats, and they're two little scent glands that sit on either side of the rectum. They normally empty involuntarily when the dog has a bowel movement, and so they'll kind of get squeezed out as stool's going through. Sometimes they will, if the dog is overweight, instead of emptying normally, they kind of move around if they've got a lot of fat deposits back on their backside and may not empty fully. And then just sitting down, the pressure causes them to leak a little bit. And so that's why dogs, if they are feeling uncomfortable back there, you'll sometimes see them scoot their bottom along the ground, which is one of the signs that the anal glands may be full, besides the getting the odor that you're seeing. And then there's just some dogs that aren't overweight, that are on a normal diet, producing normal stool, that just are prolific secretors of anal gland secretion. I used to have two Basset Hounds that it became like a weekly. They would blow up to be about the size of, oh, I don't know, pecan, okay, would be a good size. They were huge. And I would, they got to the point where my husband was, you know, unwilling to hold them while I emptied them anymore. And I ended up having them removed. And it made life a whole lot better for me. So before you jump to thinking about surgery, though, a couple things to try. One would be if your pet's overweight, follow your veterinarian's directions and get your pet on a weight-reducing diet so that there's better contact between the anus and the anal glands that are sitting back there. Think about changing the consistency of your dog's food. Some of these low-fiber foods may cause them to produce smaller, firmer stools that may not be what your dog needs. Downside is you start feeding bulkier diets, you're going to be picking up more stuff out in the backyard, but it may produce bulkier stools that'll put more pressure on the anal glands. So going to a high-fiber diet may be of some benefit. Some people have found that even adding a little bran or pumpkin may help, but I'd prefer to go with the fiber actually incorporated into the diet. You can ask your veterinarian to show you how to empty them yourself. And some people find that that's easy. They just, you know, learn how to do it externally, and they can keep it under control between veterinary visits too. So some things to be thinking about, but, you know, you're not the only one that has this. It's a very common problem.
Well, that's great advice. Hopefully it will be an easy solution.
Okay.
Now the other thing, what are hot spots?
All a hot spot is the name that we use for a condition called pyotraumatic dermatitis. Let me break that down. Pio, pus, okay? Traumatic, the dog traumatized themselves, usually with their teeth or with their feet scratching. Dermatitis, inflammation of the skin. So it's a self-induced pus-covered skin infection. And because dogs have a hairy body, what'll happen is you'll get a moist dermatitis infection that will start spreading underneath the hair coat. The hair kind of allows it to weep and spread over the dog's body. We'll see this if, you know, the dog chews at a spot, has like a hair mat, and maybe gets a damp skin infection underneath. Best thing you can do if you've got a dog that's prone to these hot spots is trim the hair away from them back to normal skin. So sometimes investing in a pair of clippers may save you a lot of problems. There is a product on the market that you can buy at drugstores that is made by the Bayer company, and it's called Dumboro Solution, and it's an astringent solution that you can just mix up and kind of, you know, take a washcloth and soak it in it. And sometimes treating these things early on, when they're just starting, when they're small, they'll dry it up really fast if you get rid of the hair over the area. And even some people that show will find that that don't want to trim their dog's hair because they can't be walking around with bald spots, that even using it over the hair coat will dry them up quickly. Many dogs need to go on a systemic antibiotic because it is a nasty skin infection if you can't get it under control that way. And then that means a visit into your veterinarian.
Okay. Well, hey, thanks for your advice.
You're welcome.
Yep, thanks a lot, Kevin. Appreciate it. And Keith in Madison, we turn to you now. Hi, Keith.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
Hi. I have a couple things for the doctor. One, we have a female cat about 3 years old, and she has very bad breath. We've had her into the vet, and they've checked her teeth and everything, and they said it could be, I guess from the stomach or something, and we just wanted to know if that is what could be causing it. And then another thing, we have a 2-year-old male cat who has like just a like about a dime size drop of blood usually in his stool, and we explained it to the vet, and he said use a a hairball lubricant, which we have, and while it has helped, there still is a, you know, you can see a trace of red blood in his stool every time. I'm just kind of curious as...
Okay, well, let's answer the male cat's question, your question regarding him first. I have a question for you, though. Is there a lot of mucus with this stool or diarrhea associated with this, or is it just firm stool that you're getting a little bit of blood on the outside of?
It's like a firmer stool with a little bit of blood.
Okay.
With it.
And that may just be that he is passing, you know, stools that he's got a fissure or something that's causing him some trouble. Being a 2-year-old cat, very unlikely that he's got a polyp or a tumor or anything bugging him that way. But, you know, first of all, get a stool sample checked, make sure that there aren't any intestinal parasites. Typically, if they've got parasites, they're going to have diarrhea. If they've got giardia or something, you may see not only blood but mucus and soft stools and so on. So that's probably not an issue, but not a bad idea if you haven't had one checked recently. You may want to look at changing the diet. Some cats do better when they have a colitis problem like this, where they're getting a little bit of bleeding, on a low-residue diet, something that is not going to have a lot of fiber and bulk in it. There are some therapeutic diets that are available on the market that meet the cat's needs. There's one that Hills makes called ID, one that Eukanuba makes called low-residue diet, and there's another one that Purina makes called EN diet, which are highly digestible, low-fiber foods, which is going to mean that he produces less stool, and it may make it easier to pass if he has a problem with not being able to pass firmer, bigger stools. The hairball issue, maybe. I mean, the laxative type stuff that you use, all those are is petroleum jelly, and it just kind of helps lubricate the hair and maybe make the stool a little bit easier to pass if he has some problems with dryness, if he's straining. But, you know, I don't know if that's going to actually be necessary in the long run, and it may interfere with digestion if you use it frequently.
Now, he is on the ID diet.
He is on ID. Okay.
The hard. He doesn't get much soft.
Yeah. And again, you know, maybe even increasing the water consumption if he's got drier stools, you know, getting him a kiddie water fountain, looking at feeding some of the same brand of food that you're using, but in a canned formula to see if that increases his water intake. That again may make the stools a little bit softer and a little bit easier to pass as well. If his stools truly are really hard and he's having a hard time passing it too, there are other medical stool softeners. There's one that is called Lactulose that we use commonly in cats. You can get it by prescription from your veterinarian. But, you know, again, I'd have to leave that up to your vet. These can be tricky cases to deal with. And you may even, if you really want to get to the bottom of this, pardon the pun, be looking at a visit to a specialist that can do a colonoscopy to have a good look up there to see if there is anything that, like a polyp or something that is being irritated and causing the bleeding. But at this point, if he's healthy and happy, that may be, you know, jumping ahead a little too far with what you need to do. For your 3-year-old cat with bad breath, number one reason is dental disease, and even a small amount of plaque and gingivitis can cause a cat to have bad breath. And so I would assume that your veterinarian said her teeth are just spotless, nothing on her teeth, gums aren't red, nothing like that, or does she have a little bit of dental disease?
No, I mean, when the vet has checked her, he seems to say that, no, she has no problems there.
Huh. I just wouldn't expect that it's refluxing or something that's odor coming from the stomach, because that would be an intermittent problem. And if her breath problem is a constant problem, if she'll let you brush her teeth, definitely I would start doing that and
okay.
See if that makes a difference. Cats sometimes don't see the humor in having that done. There are some dental treats that you can use that may help a little bit, even some prescription type chews that you can get. That there's a company called CET that makes a chew for cats that are an enzymatic chew that may help. But, you know, try some, don't use human toothpaste. Make sure you do use a pet toothpaste. And
sure.
There's seafood-flavored ones and poultry-flavored ones, and, you know, get started using something like that and see if that makes a difference.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks a lot for calling, Keith. And Lisa in Ocado, it's your turn now. Hi, Lisa.
Hello, and thank you for my call.
Sure.
I have a Lhasa, about 2 years old, and a couple weekends ago, he became really ill on a Saturday night, and I noticed that he had blood in his stool. And then the next day, he was just really lazy and everything. And we took him to the vet on Monday morning, and they said he has whipworm.
Ah.
He has
you know, we got him from a kennel, mm-hmm. and he's dewormed and everything. And we were wondering what causes it, and the vet also said that it may come back.
Oh, thank you. A good topic. Yeah. Got lots of backside topics today for some reason. I don't know why I track those, but whipworms are a parasite that dogs are not born with. They get them from a contaminated environment. And the reason why they become such an issue for dogs is that once a dog with whipworms has defecated in their environment, the eggs can survive for 3 to 5 years, even through freezing in winter in Wisconsin. Hmm. And so if your dog goes back and is playing ball out in the backyard, digging in the yard, doing anything, is going to be re-exposed to this particular parasite because it's there. And so once they've been in an area, they're going to get it again. And so somewhere along your dog's life, they were in the wrong spot at the wrong time. It's a difficult parasite to diagnose sometimes because these little critters don't lay eggs on a regular basis. And so you can check a stool sample and it may be negative, or if you're lucky, it's positive. But just because you don't have eggs present on the microscope when we do a intestinal parasite evaluation doesn't mean that it isn't whipworms. So when dogs come in with a problem, and this is just a dog parasite, cats don't get whipworms. So we've got the last call with the blood in the stool. You're probably wondering why I didn't bring this up with that particular patient. But that was a cat. But when we have a dog with blood in its stool, one of the first things we do is check a fecal. And if it's positive, wonderful. If it's negative, we still deworm them. And most veterinarians will pick a drug called Panacure or Fenbendazole. There's another one called Drontel Plus that gets used frequently. And even the heartworm preventatives that your veterinarian may choose to put your dog on, it can make a difference. The one in particular that I would recommend that your dog go on every month, even if you just use heartworm prevention seasonally, this is the kind of problem where we would be using it year-round, not for the heartworm control, but because it gets intestinal parasites, and in particular, whipworms. It's called Interceptor, or it sometimes is also known as Sentinel if you get it with a flea control agent added into it. That would be the one that I would be recommending your veterinarian prescribe for your dog so that you get monthly treatment. Every month your dog is treated before an infection can set up and they can start shedding eggs again. So that should be the heartworm preventative you use year round.
Okay. I have two dogs. One has it and one don't.
Well, it doesn't mean the other one doesn't have it because they may not be symptomatic. And I would be putting, if they're both sharing the same area for defecating, they both need to be on this heartworm preventative.
Okay. Is there anything we can use in our yard to get rid of them?
Nope. You can pave your yard. You can rototill the top 6 inches over. You can burn it.
But nothing that you
no.
could...
It's no easy thing. Enough. And this is not something that people get. So you don't have to worry about human contamination. Many other parasites cause huge health problems for people. This is one that's specific for dogs, not zoonotic, meaning it doesn't affect people. And it's really easy to control with just even sometimes the heartworm preventative that you put your dog on.
Okay.
Thanks for calling.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Appreciate it. And Betty in Madison, your turn. Hi, Betty.
Hi, Larry. I have a small poodle, and I like to play with him in the house. So I throw a toy, and he runs and gets it, and then he brings it back. And after I do that a couple of times, he stops, and he starts licking the inside of his right foreleg.
Huh.
And he'll do that for 5 or 10 minutes, and, you know, that's kind of the end of our play.
Huh.
And he's been doing that for over a year.
And not limping?
No, I don't notice.
Never any. Shows any problems that way? And you haven't noticed any skin issues in
no,
that area?
No skin issues.
Huh.
Examine that.
Well, you know, whenever we have a dog that licks a specific area, you know, when we have a joint that hurts, you know, if your elbow hurt, you'd probably reach over and rub it, which mm-hmm. I'm doing it right now as we're talking on the radio. You know, dogs can't do that. So what they may do is lick if something's bothering them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, evaluating that to see if the joint is puffy, if there's any evidence of arthritis, and it may be something that, again, bring this up with your veterinarian the next time you're in. It doesn't sound like it urgent.
And he gave him Rimadyl.
Okay.
and it doesn't seem to do any good.
Yeah, so it may be that if, you know, we put him on an anti-arthritis drug, he may not have arthritis. This could just be a behavior pattern that your dog has started as a way of saying, I've had enough, I'm ready to just sit down and do, you know, my, you know, it would be like us twiddling our thumbs or doing something to just pass the time, and it's maybe soothing, and it may just be a habit that your dog has gotten into. You know, one thing that I'd recommend is trying to break the habit by giving your dog alternative behaviors, such as, okay, we played ball in the house, now let's go for a walk. And instead of allowing them to go through this licking cycle afterwards, introduce something new that, you know, if the dog's got a leash on and it's trotting along the street, it's going to be really hard to be able to lick your lick its leg.
But he'll do this after I've just done it, thrown it twice.
Yeah.
I mean, we're not through playing.
Yeah, maybe he's through, but you're not. So, yeah. Good luck with him.
Thanks, Betty. And Jen and Madison, your turn. Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. I would like to bring up the issue of cat overeating again. And I have a cat who overeats. I have a cat who overeats quite a bit, and he keeps begging for food, and I'm not sure how to tell him, no, I feel like I'm the problem.
Yeah, and you know, unfortunately, a lot of it is us being trained by our cats. When you look at the way cats like to eat on average about 13 little meals a day. And so that's why most cat owners put the food out and just let it sit and let the cat wander over and eat. Unfortunately, you know, if you look at cats in the wild, they're hunting and working and surviving and trying to catch their prey to be able to eat these multiple little meals a day. The cat that's in the house doesn't have to expend a lot of energy to be able to get its meal. And then when it's there, it's, you know, they can sit down and very easily consume more than they need in the day. So I train owners right from the get-go to start meal feeding cats so that we train them early on that food comes at certain times. If you haven't done that right away, it's gonna, there's going to be this kind of learning curve for your cat. And I suggest that you go out and plug some earplugs in your ears, shut your bedroom door, and, you know, the cat will learn eventually. This is when food comes. You can go out and get one of those automatic feeders that has a little door that opens. Not one of the ones that just a hopper feeder that just they can eat willy-nilly, but one that, that has a little flapper door that opens so that the cat can sit in front of the food bowl rather than bug you, and the door opens and whoop, there's their dinner. And so you can load up, you know, three or four little compartments throughout the day with the cat's total caloric needs in food. Sometimes putting food in things like treat balls, they're little balls that... they're more common in the dog world, but they do make them for cats that you can put some of their kibble or treats in. The cat will play with that, and that slows down eating a little bit as well. And then giving them alternative behaviors, you know, chasing toys and things is definitely going to be helpful, and chasing a toy is going to be better than eating any day if you've got a cat that's got an eating problem.
Okay. Thanks,
Jen. Good luck.
Patty and DeForest, hello.
Hello, Larry.
What can I do for you?
Well, doctor, I have a 5.5-year-old male cat that starting last Friday, this past Friday, I came home from work, and I thought he had accidentally caught his claw or something, but he fell over to his side, fell on his side and was clumsy. And then I, you know, I just knew it wasn't normal behavior for him, and as I watched him, he would walk a straight line at some point, but then he would just collapse. And it's usually to his left side. And we notice when we rubbed his ears, too, he'll shake his ears and then he'll collapse. But at just yesterday, he got up and then went down and got up and went down and got up and went down.
Yeah.
Because we have such a short time here.
Get him to your vet. Yeah. I think that's the number one thing is when you've got a neurologic problem like this, needs to be evaluated to see what it is. Whether it's a balance problem, seizure disorder, cardiovascular disorder, needs to be looked into.
Yeah. And I wish we had more time for that, Patty, but that is very good advice. And as always, Dr. Sandy Sawchuk has great advice. Thanks for being with us. You'll be back soon. We'll do it again.
Couple of months, yep.
All right. Dr. Sandy Sawchuk, clinical professor at the UW School of Veterinary Medicine. Pleased to have her along, and she'll be back again, and we'll talk with her again. Tomorrow, we'll talk about the International Crane Foundation at Baraboo. They're flapping their wings about the annual crane count in Wisconsin, so we'll hear about that. And then we'll also talk about bike rides across Wisconsin and beyond. So we'll look forward to that as well. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.